You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, May the 18th, and time for our Friday Week in Review. Every Friday at this time, we look back on the week that was with two guests from different perspectives and with you, too. We'll cover the latest news in Wisconsin and Washington, D.C., to the world for that matter, and you can join in with whatever has you talking. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Our weekend reviewers this week are Owen Robinson, blogger for the website bootsandsabers.com, a columnist for the West Bend Daily News. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And also with us is Bill Leaders. He is the news editor for Isthmus, Madison's alternative newspaper, president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, and author of Cry Rape. He's also the reporter of an exclusive story in this week's Isthmus. Georgia Thompson's lawyers say feds wanted her to implicate Doyle. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Owen.
We will talk about your scoop in just a few minutes, Bill. But let me talk first about the latest news coming late yesterday from Washington, D.C. on immigration. That we now have a deal between Republicans and Democrats that's drawing fire from both Republicans and Democrats. Supporters of the measure, which tightens border security while giving millions of illegal immigrants a chance at legal status, say that it will improve the current system, but there's criticism from both sides of the aisle. Many conservatives say no matter how many backers spin it, the bill offers amnesty to illegal immigrants. Owen Robinson, what do you think of this proposal?
Well, it's worth noting that nobody's actually seen this bill yet. It's some 300 pages, and so really all we have out of it now is what the people who made the deal are saying is in it. Keeping in mind, I'm trying to keep an open mind, is because we haven't seen the details, and the devil is always in the details. I do think that it appears pretty clear. It does offer an amnesty program or something very similar to amnesty. It does offer some good things for people who want strong immigration security. Offers another 300 and something miles of wall, 18,000 border agents. I think the provision where we give priority over people with marketable skills as opposed to family members for new immigrants coming is an important thing that people have been fighting for quite some time. And I guess at this point I'm very skeptical because once you give amnesty, you've given it. It's done. They're citizens. They're permanent residents. They're here. And I guess given the track record of this administration and administrations in the past, I don't have a lot of confidence that the enforcement mechanisms in this deal would ever actually be enacted.
Now, what do you think, Bill Leaders?
Well, it strikes me that the proposed solution to the so-called immigration problem is really a repudiation of the notion that immigration is a problem. We're basically saying, yes, we can accommodate millions of new residents, that the people who are now living here illegally can be incorporated into the mainstream and they can be and become legal citizens and everything will be fine. We need these workers. We've always needed these workers. And the solution basically acknowledges that and brings them into the fold.
Yeah. So, Owen Robinson, are we going to see this this immigration reform pass?
I think that's hard to say. It's getting fire from both sides. And, the Senate came up with a deal last session as well, and it never went through. There's a lot in this compromise appears for people to like and a lot for them to dislike. I think it's going to run into a buzzsaw from the extremes while the moderates try to pass it, and we'll see how that happens.
I guess I'm more impressed by the amount of support that it's getting. I mean, this is legislation that has the support of the Bush administration, of Bill O'Reilly, and of Edward Kennedy. How often does something like that come along?
It's strange bedfellows, yeah. Well, one thing that didn't pass was Senator Russ Feingold's bill to cut off funds for the war in Iraq.
It is time to end a war that is draining our resources, straining our military, and undermining our national security. And the way to do that is by using our power of the purse to safely bring our brave troops out of Iraq.
And this did not pass the Senate, but how significant, bill leaders, do you think it is that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama did vote for this bill?
Well, it's very significant. Anti-war sentiment in Congress, and it's clearly building. It's more than twice as many people voted for this measure this time around as they did when a similar thing came up last year. So clearly there's been a momentum toward the idea that we have to extricate ourselves from this situation. I do think that politically overall, the politicians are way behind the electorate on this. If it were up to the American people, we would be out much sooner than we will be since it's actually up to the politicians.
Owen Robinson.
To me, it's just more political gamesmanship. There was, even though more people voted for it, nobody thought it was going to pass, and surely it didn't pass. Even if it passed in that house, it's unlikely it would pass in the other. And even if it passed both houses, it would be vetoed by Bush, and the votes aren't there to get it through. So it's political posturing.
Yeah. The Senate also rejected a plan by Republican moderates that would have cut off funds if certain political and security reforms in Iraq were not achieved, but then Democrats said it was too weak because a last-minute provision was added to the bill that would have let President Bush waive the restriction. So moderate Republicans offered their own proposal that didn't go anywhere either, Owen Robinson.
Yeah, and it's people trying to find a way. Nobody likes to get up and champion the war very much anymore, and especially in Congress on either side of the aisle. So, I think people are looking for a way to make statements instead of governing.
So now what, bill leaders?
Well, it's interesting. I think I agree with Owen on this. It seems that the Democrats and Republicans are largely united as they want to say that they're not really in favor of the war, and they also don't want to do anything about it. They're willing to continue funding. They're willing to continue to give the president a blank check to send people over there to kill and to die. But when asked about this, they'll say, I'm not really a big fan of this.
Mm-hmm. Now what, Owen Robinson?
Well, now I think it's, we're going to go back around. I think Bill's right. They are going to fund the war. They're not going to get any withdrawal mechanisms in there. And we're going to be right where Bush probably wanted him in the first place.
Hey, Bill Leaders, what do you think of President Bush choosing a war czar to oversee the fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan? It is Lieutenant General Douglas Lute, the Pentagon's Director of Operations.
Talk about a job no one would like. They had a hard time, I think, finding someone who was willing to take that. And it's probably... It probably is not a coveted position because there's no way you can win in that situation. There's no way you can win in this war. The most encouraging thing that I've seen with regard to Iraq is this movement that the administration has been suggesting that, the Iraqi government needs to make progress. The Iraqi government needs to do more. I think the Bush administration is coming around to its own version of peace with honor, which is that in the end, it will blame the Iraqis for not having their act together. And, if you look at this situation in its totality, you really have to appreciate the hubris of the story in its full arc, that we invade a country in violation of international law and under false pretenses, we destroy the infrastructure, we kill thousands of people, we plunge the country into chaos and civil war, and then we accept a puppet government that has no legitimacy and can't keep control, and then we say, listen, you're screwing everything up. If you don't get your act together, we're leaving. Mm-hmm. But, if that's what, it's after the excuse that they have to come up with to get out, I'm all for it.
Your thoughts on the war czar, Owen Robinson?
I find the whole concept of a war czar to be somewhat offensive and somewhat hysterical at the same time. The president is the commander in chief. It's his job to be the war czar, mm-hmm. and the fact that he's trying to shove that responsibility off on some poor guy over at the Pentagon, I agree with Bill, it's not an enviable job. What I think Bush is trying to do is he realizes that at this point that his own personal credibility with Congress is at such a poor state that he's looking to remove his personality from the mission so that perhaps he can gather more support for it. In the end, I don't think it'll be a successful political strategy for Bush because everybody knows that he's behind the scenes anyway, and that ultimately responsibility does rest with him.
We are reviewing the news of the week with Owen Robinson, blogger for the website bootsandsabres.com, and Bill Leaders, news editor for Isthmus, Madison's alternative weekly newspaper. And we will talk about Bill Leaders' scoop when we come back in just a few minutes. Plus, we'll talk about how this fits into the ongoing saga of the embattled U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. And we welcome your thoughts and questions about the news of the week. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. It's your views on the news after 4 when you can call in and talk with Ben and his guest about the top news stories of the week. And we are reviewing the top news stories of the week this hour with our two Week in Review guests, Owen Robinson and Bill Leaders. And let me let a caller bring up our next topic, Dave in Wanakee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. We learned this week that 2 years ago, President Bush sent his presidential counsel, Alberto Gonzalez, and chief of staff, Andy Card, to strong-arm John Ashcroft in his hospital bed in intensive care into signing off on domestic wiretaps that the attorney general had already determined were illegal under the Constitution. After he was rebuffed, the president said he would break the law anyway. So Attorney General Ashcroft, Deputy Attorney General Comey, and FBI Director Mueller threatened to resign en masse, and he backed down.
Right. In fact, let me thank you, Dave, for bringing up that topic, and we'll talk about it. But let me play a clip of Comey's testimony before Congress this week on that.
I thought I had just witnessed an effort to take advantage of a very sick man who did not have the powers of the Attorney General because they've been transferred to me.
So what do we have here, Bill Leaders? Is this another political nail in the political coffin of Alberto Gonzalez?
Well, I don't know how many more nails you have to pound into that coffin before you can put it into the ground. But this is just an astounding story. You've got Gonzalez and Andy Card going to the hospital to try to get John Ashcroft to sign off on this unconstitutional wiretapping, and you have Comey finding out about it and teaming up with Mueller, and they rush over there. They're racing up the steps of the hospital, and they're getting, busting into the room while the president's people are confronting Ashcroft. And, you know, it's just an amazing story.
Sounds like it's out of 24 or something.
Yeah, and then you have all of these people, these high-ranking Justice Department aides who threaten to resign over what the president is doing, and Gonzalez is right in the middle of it. And then later, Gonzalez testifies before Congress, and he says, you know, there was never any serious disagreement about this program. Just a point-blank, blatant lie that he tells to the U.S. Congress that he's got caught in, and not the first. You know, how much more does Alberto Gonzalez have to do before people realize that he has absolutely no credibility in that position and never will have?
Owen Robinson?
I find the story kind of funny from the aspect that we see liberals lining up to give sympathy for Ashcroft on his sickbed. Ashcroft, perhaps one of the most hated men by the left in America. So I find that kind of funny. But
if he ever deserves sympathy at all, it's when he's on his sickbed.
And when it's convenient for the story, I understand. But as for the story itself, I mean, to a large extent, I think that Gonzalez has proven to be, I think he has lost a great deal of credibility if he had it to start with. It seems pretty clear, particularly from his previous testimony regarding the attorney general's, or the U.S. attorney firings, rather, that he's kind of a bumbling, hands-off manager, and you know, that's not someone we want as attorney general. That being said, you know, as far as the disagreement over the constitutionality of that particular program, it is both the president's and everybody else's responsibility to adhere to the Constitution. And if President Bush sincerely thought, and under the advice of other people, thought that it was constitutional, he's certainly within his right to override his attorney general. So I'm not sure it's quite the political gotcha we'd like it to be. It certainly is dramatic, but it's a whatever story.
Yeah, the president was asked at a news conference yesterday, I think, whether he told Andy Card to go over to Ashcroft's hospital bed to get that approval on the warrantless wiretapping, and the president said, "I'm not going to talk about it, and it's a sensitive situation."
Well, he did have direct knowledge of this because the president personally intervened after these resignations were threatened to come into the situation and work out a deal where he basically let the Justice Department off the hook. He initially felt that he needed the Justice Department to sign off on this, and then he decided there's some way that we can do it without the Justice Department's consent, and he proceeded to do it that way. But he was personally involved in the situation. Let me just say one thing about John Ashcroft and his newfound status as a darling of the political left is, even in this situation, when he was in his hospital bed and they were coming in there to pressure him to authorize this wiretapping, he held firm. He said, no, we won't do it. We won't agree. It's not constitutional. We say no. So, yeah. You know, bully to him.
Chuck Hagel joined other Republicans in recent weeks in calling for the resignation of Alberto Gonzalez. We hear that there's going to be a no-confidence vote in Congress or in the Senate next week on Alberto Gonzalez. I heard some talking heads on TV saying he's, you know, it's going to be overwhelmingly no confidence. Is he going to resign, Bill Leaders?
I hope he doesn't. You know, I mean, what better emblem for this administration than to have someone who's completely incompetent and a known liar heading up the highest law enforcement office of the country? It's just perfect.
Do you hope he does or doesn't resign, Owen Robinson?
I admit I'm torn on that. I do think that he's not not appropriate for that position. I think it's you know, it's interesting to see the Congress reverting to some to Parliament or something, having no confidence votes. But you know, the problem that Bush faces and the Bush administration faces is that if Gonzalez resigns, or if he's forced to resign, or if he's outright sacked, we have to get a new attorney general. And given the political climate on Capitol Hill right now, those confirmation hearings would be just an absolute circus, keeping in mind that he already has a deputy attorney general that he has to get confirmed. So, you know, I think that's a large part of it, besides obviously his Bush's legendary personal loyalty to his friends like Gonzalez. There are some practical reasons that it's very problematic for the Bush administration, either way.
Well, let's talk about Bill Leader's scoop, his exclusive story in this week's Isthmus. Headline, Georgia Thompson's lawyers say feds wanted her to implicate Doyle. So what, Bill Leaders?
Well, this is a new aspect of this story. Mm-hmm. As you know, this became a big deal story because the appellate court overturned the conviction of Georgia Thompson, a state purchasing agent who was convicted of improperly steering a travel contract to a particular company. The appellate court overturned it just at the time that news was breaking about the Attorney General firing eight U.S. attorneys in circumstances where they were apparently not political enough to suit the U.S. attorney. And then it came to light that Stephen Biskupic of Eastern District of Wisconsin was at one time on a list of people who were deemed not sufficiently loyal to the president, and were being eyed for termination. Somehow or other, he got off of that list, and the concern was raised that maybe some of the prosecutions he engaged in were pleasing to the powers that be in Washington. And the Georgia Thompson case, which deeply embarrassed Governor Doyle and was used against him during the campaign, was held up as an example of a very questionable prosecution, and his motives were cast into question. What I was able to find by talking to Georgia Thompson's attorneys, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time, they declined to talk about what had happened in the case until the danger for their client was past. Very recently, Steve Biskupic announced that he would not appeal the appellate court ruling, and that made them feel it was okay to talk about what had happened. And what Georgia Thompson's attorneys, Stephen Hurley, told me was that there were repeated offers made by the office of Stephen Biskupic and Biskupic himself to go easy on their client if she would testify before a grand jury implicating others, including Jim Doyle and other higher-ups in his administration. They were really after Doyle, and they made offers to her. In fact, they made offers to her after She was convicted and, excuse me, after she was sentenced, after she was convicted and sentenced, they came back and they made a series of offers to Georgia Thompson that we will ask for a reduction in your sentence if you testify now, which is, you know, really an extraordinary thing to do. And it suggests that there was a goal, the ultimate goal of this prosecution wasn't to get Georgia Thompson, it was to get Jim Doyle.
Mm-hmm. Owen Robinson, is that pretty damning?
I don't think so at all. Isn't this what we expect our prosecutors to do, where they try to flip underlings to get the higher-ups? This is a traditional, classic prosecutorial process where you grant, especially in the federal system, where you grant amnesty from prosecution to lower people to try to get them to testify against people who are higher up in the chain, in the food chain, if you will. It was used against the mob. It's used against gangs. It's used against political corruption. It's an utterly common and perfectly ethical practice. And frankly, I would have been shocked if they weren't doing that, because clearly the implication of the Thompson case was that she rigged the bid, the Edelman bid, in order to benefit a Doyle contributor, which would implicate either Doyle himself or those close to him, particularly the administration secretary. So, you know, it just seemed, I honestly, Bill, I read your story and I was like, well, duh, of course they did. And we would expect them to. And I'm willing to bet that even Governor Doyle, when he was attorney general, practiced the same sort of prosecutorial techniques.
It may be utterly common for this to be done, but I don't know that it's completely ethical, especially if you're leaning on someone who has no information to give. Then you just...
But they don't know that at the time.
Well,
they're leaning
they
on him
ultimately.
To see if she will give up information for it.
Well, you know, then it's not just to throw the book at someone thinking that by doing so will lead you to other people who are more guilty than that person. And then if your theory of the crime proves to be completely erroneous, to stick with it and put that person in prison just to cover yourself.
It's worth noting that when the appeals court struck down the conviction, they didn't say that Biskupic did anything wrong. They said he misinterpreted the law from the aspect that Thompson did not personally gain from doing it, but they acknowledged that she did go through extraordinary measures to rig that bid, and that it was for a Doyle contributor. The facts of the case stand. The difference is as a conservative appeals court, they thought that that it was overreaching a bit, which is you know. But again, they said that the prosecutor didn't do anything wrong.
They didn't say that. I read that decision. They did not say that. They said he may have been acting in a good faith interpretation of a flawed law.
Appeals court thought he did something wrong, wouldn't they have said the prosecutor overstepped his bounds, or the prosecutor, it's silent on
that.
Well,
you know, they didn't say he didn't overstep his bounds. They didn't make the statement that you just represented, that he did nothing wrong. Such a conclusion is reached nowhere in that decision. It's just not there.
They said he may have had
a good faith reason for doing what he did.
He may have had a good faith and an accurate interpretation of the law.
And they also said that his attempt to treat Thompson's alleged conduct as a crime was preposterous.
Let me bring in a caller, Eric in Appleton. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning. My question is, I feel the same way, that I'm not surprised they did this. I'm very sure that the whole Scooter Libby trial, he wasn't the target. I'm sure it was Cheney, and they were trying to use him to flip on Cheney, because I think that was the goal. I think that's the way all prosecutions work.
Isn't that Bill Eaters?
Yeah, I don't know if that's directly comparable. I think there is probably some parallel in those situations. The key for me is whether the conviction that you get against the person that you prosecute is fair on its own terms, or whether it's just the final outcome of wrongfully leveraging a person based on a theory of a crime that proves to be inaccurate.
Yeah, you did talk to Frank Turkheimer, a former U.S. Prosecutor, who did say that it does happen that you go after an underling to try to get at the superior.
Sure,
but he also said that Georgia Thompson got royally screwed in this.
Yeah, because in this case it was that the theory of the crime that the prosecution had adopted was false. That, you know, they believe that she was acting at the behest of others in the Doyle administration, and they went after her in order to get her to give up those others, and she never did because it never happened, and so she just got, as he put it, screwed.
Well, it's worth noting that although the conviction was eventually overturned on appeal, it was brought forth by a grand jury. It was prosecuted by a federal judge. She was convicted by a jury of her peers. There were a lot of people involved here. And so to argue, if Biskupic had brought up charges and then dropped them and used them as merely a threat, that would be unethical. But he went through with what he believed to be a valid interpretation of the law and got a conviction. The fact that it was overturned later does not negate the fact that he was acting in good faith and that he believed that she did commit a crime.
Look, I'm not legitimately dumping on Biskupic and saying he absolutely did something ethically wrong here. I think he made a terrible mistake, and that this is more evidence of the nature and of the mistake that he made.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we mentioned it, but that when Jim Comey was testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee this week, he did say he can't imagine why U.S. Attorney Steve Biskupic would wind up on a list of targeted prosecutors whose performance and loyalty to President Bush had been questioned. He was the Deputy Attorney General. He told the committee that Biskupic believes in the independence of the Justice Department, again, reacting to the speculation.
Well, see, right there, that's the problem. You know, that was the perceived problem, is that maybe he was too much of a straight arrow for them and he wasn't engaging in the type of political prosecutions that they wanted U.S. attorneys to be engaging in.
Okay. Anything else, that one?
Well, I'm just curious, which is it? Is he a straight arrow or is he a wild political hack? We seem to be waffling depending on whether we're talking about the U.S. attorney firings case or the Georgia Thompson case.
Well, let's talk about a different case. We should talk a little
Can't
bit
of both.
We have other issues to get to, but let me just ask, because it's sort of kind of related. Supreme Court Justice-elect Annette Ziegler agrees that she violated the state ethics code and agreed to pay a $5,000 fine under a settlement. Is that a surprise to you, Bill Leaders?
Well, it gets her out of this situation, and she's coming away kind of smugly saying, you know, I never benefited personally from this. That was never the real issue, that whether she benefited personally financially from this. It's that she had an ethical obligation to notify parties that she had a connection to the case that maybe they would have wanted to know about, and she didn't do that. She admitted that she was wrong in that, but, you know, I don't know what it means when you have millions upon millions upon millions of dollars and you spend like $1 million of your own money to get elected to the Supreme Court, and then you pay a $17,000 fine. Mm-hmm. You know, what really does that mean in terms of your own admission of culpability? It's a pretty slight slap on the wrist for a person with that much money to pay such a small sum.
Owen Robinson?
You know, that she obviously broke the ethics code, and she has admitted it, and she has paid her fine and done everything that was expected of her. I don't see how, what else do you want, Bill? Do you want her to be, you know, shamed and on Capitol Hill with, you know, put a sign around her neck? Do you want her to have to pay $500,000? I mean, what would satisfy it? I think that,
well,
you know, and I think I've seen some of the
reprimand?
Reaction. I think I've seen some of the reaction on the left side of the blogosphere where I spend my time in my medium of choice. You know, saying that they were disappointed because there weren't hearings, because now there wasn't the opportunity to have her making statements. And I think that a lot of that's been a lot of the driving force behind a lot of this all along, was they wanted to have a show trial. They wanted to discredit Ziegler to such a point that they could discredit any future rulings that she may have, and where they could try to shame her into recusing herself as one of the conservative members of the court. And I think that's the larger picture that this is about. The fact that, you know, in a relatively small county where she's a member of a family that's connected to almost everything in the county, you know, that she broke the ethics code in a way where she didn't personally benefit for these little bitty cases that oftentimes weren't even weren't even trials where the defendant didn't show up. So,
you know,
I mean, clearly
she
did something wrong. She paid the fine. Let's move on.
These aren't little bitty cases for the people who are caught up in them. Yeah. When a bank takes you to court and sues you, it's not a little bitty thing in your life.
Let me, and let's move on to another issue as our time is running short in the hour, and we've got lots more to cover. There was a resignation this week. Paul Wolfowitz says he will step down from the World Bank, some sort of a settlement where he'll, I think he's going to get a deal out of this, where he's been under fire, of course, for promoting his girlfriend and getting her a big money deal. I don't know, Bill Leaders, your reaction to the Wolfowitz resignation?
Well, it was obviously done under extraordinary pressure from within the World Bank itself, and there was a special bank panel that looked into his hiring or his arranging for a generous compensation package for his girlfriend, and declared that that was a point-blank violation of ethics rules. I was really struck by something that the bank panel said in the decision that it rendered and that found that he engaged in unethical conduct. He said that Wolfowitz had showed questionable judgment and a preoccupation with self-interest over institutional best interest. I mean, doesn't that really define the Bush administration? This guy is going to never want for work.
Owen Robinson.
Well, other than there's a couple things that are interesting. One, when this apparently happened the first time, the authorities that be within the World Bank signed off on it and said it was fine. It was no ethical problem. A year later, it's brought back up and made into a big issue. I suspect that, you know, the World Bank is one of these hyper type of political organizations that I suspect that there's some internal power struggles where Wolfowitz's time was up and people wanted him out. So they found a way to force him out. You know, it's worth noting that to date, his tenure at the World Bank has been seen as quite competent, and that he's done some good things with the bank. So
we have to move on. I will take a short break, and then when we get back, we'll talk about the Republican presidential candidate debate this week a little bit, and talk about Tommy Thompson's performance in that debate. He came in last in a Fox News poll rating how the candidates did. The Capital Times, in essence, this week saying that maybe he should get out of the race. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about Wisconsin Eye going online this week. We'll wonder if you're watching this or plan to, plus other action going on in our state government. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Today marks the second annual Endangered Species Day. After 9, Kathleen will talk with the policy director of the Center for Biological Diversity. We're reviewing the news of the week with our two esteemed Week in Reviewers this week. Bill Leaders, news editor for Isthmus, Madison's alternative newspaper. He's also the president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council and author of Cry Rape. Owen Robinson is a conservative blogger for the website bootsandsabers.com, a columnist for the West Bend Daily News. Well, we had the second GOP presidential candidate debate this week, and well, we could rate, I guess, everybody. I don't usually like to ask people who was the winner of that, but Tommy Thompson apparently was not the winner, according to the Fox News poll that was conducted right after the debate. He came in last. Owen Robinson, what do you think?
Did anybody watch that debate?
I did.
Even for a political junkie like me, it's a little too early for me to stomach a 10-person debate. But, and it's such a hard format for anybody to do well because each of the candidates, you have, what, maybe 3 to 4 minutes throughout the entire debate to actually say anything.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult format. That being said, Tommy's candidacy is going nowhere, has gone nowhere, and, I don't know why he's in the race either.
Bill Leaders?
Well, I went back and forth between watching the debate and watching the Brewers game. And, the Brewers lost. I gather that Thompson didn't do much better. I wouldn't rule Tommy Thompson out. I just think it's way too early for people to say that there are these three front runners and those are the only people who matter. I've said all along, and I'll say again just so that I can look prescient when it proves to be correct, that Mike Huckabee is the candidate to watch. He could very well be the presidential nominee. He could very well be the president. He's personable. He's really a hardcore conservative, but he doesn't come across as such. And he should have a tremendous appeal to the base of the Republican Party once they get to know him.
And he did get a good zinger in there on Edwards.
Yes, he did.
From what I hear. But, you know, I think honestly, Joy isn't going to ask the question, but I'll answer. Winner of that debate was Fred Thompson.
Yeah. Because everybody wants him to enter, right?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was clear that, people stumbled. There's nobody who's really running out in front and being the front runner. Giuliani's leading in the polls, but it's a weak lead. And it kind of, you know, and for Fred Thompson, who isn't even in the race, to be listed third is quite a statement.
You know, there's another candidate that we should mention is if that Fox poll that put Thompson last has any validity, people should note that Ron Paul, the representative from Texas, came in second in that poll.
Yeah, I think it was an unscientific one where people could just call in or text in like American Idol.
But I saw some of his performance in the debate, and he said some things that distinguished him from the rest. He was against the war, and he made some useful observations about 9/11, for which Giuliani slapped him.
Yeah, in fact, let's just because I have the audio, and I did watch the debate because I had to talk about it. And we have, Ron Paul said that 9/11 in part was caused by U.S. foreign policy, including, he said, attacking Iran or Iraq 10 years ago.
That's really an extraordinary statement. It's an extraordinary statement as someone who lived through the attack of September 11, that we invited the attack because we were attacking Iraq. I don't think I've ever heard that before, and I've heard some pretty absurd explanations for September 11. And I would ask the congressman to withdraw that comment and tell us that he didn't really mean that.
But he did not apologize.
If we think that we can do what we want around the world and not incite hatred, then we have a problem. They don't come here to attack us because we're rich and we're free. They come and they attack us because we're over there.
Owen Robinson?
Well, it's worth noting that Ron Paul is getting strong libertarian support, and that's a lot of their line of thinking. The truth is that Giuliani scored some great points there. He obviously brings a lot of credibility to the whole 9/11 issue, but Paul is partly correct in that, of course, our foreign policy actions have repercussions, and whether they're positive or negative, the question is, what do you do? Do we go completely isolationist and just not go anywhere or do anything? Anything you do will generate a reaction, positive or negative, and that's part of it. I don't think to specifically tie that to 9/11 is a bit specious. And I think the reasons that the terrorists are coming after Western civilization are there's a lot of layers. There's a lot of different reasons, but the fact that we are and have been for a century, Western powers have been meddling in Middle Eastern politics, is a fraction of that reason.
Let me, I didn't mean to bring this up, but when you talked about Fred Thompson, it reminded me. I see that Fred Thompson and Michael Moore are in a feud. Michael Moore has a documentary called Sicko about Cuba's healthcare system. And Fred Thompson is on, I don't know, like YouTuber's own website criticizing Michael Moore and saying, hey, Cuba does not have a great system, and if you disagree with Fidel Castro, you end up in a mental institution getting electroshock, and that's something you should think of, Michael Moore, a mental institution. Why is Fred Thompson taking on Michael Moore, Owen Robinson?
Well, right now, I think it's, first, I'd like to point out that I'll bet more people watch that video than watch the debate. in this nation. I don't know. I think Fred Thompson is in this very enviable place where if he does get into the presidential race, which I do think he will, but by holding out early, he can set his own terms and his own issues. And taking on Michael Moore is always popular with the Republican base. So it's entertainment. He's, you know, part of it is entertainment value.
You know, I guess I object to this level of political posturing that people like Fred Thompson engage in this situation, or Giuliani engaged in and slapping down Ron Paul for having the audacity to say something sensible. You know, they're pandering to a certain constituency of conservatives who would rather score cheap political points against the quote-unquote liberal opponents than they would to, you know, actually think through an issue. It just slaps people down for saying something or for presenting an argument that challenges basic assumptions. And I just don't know what we gain as a nation from that type of dialogue, you know, to create an applause line for the hardcore right by attacking someone who says something or presents an issue that maybe causes us to think and to have some discomfort.
Well, it's worth noting that Fred Thompson's video response was in response to Michael Moore challenging him to debate. So this kind of political posturing goes on both sides. It's not exclusive to the right. And I think if you've watched any of the Democrat debates, you would see that there are some people, for instance, Lieberman's a perfect example. Whenever he gets up and starts supporting the war, he gets hammered by the left to score political points with the base of the Democrat Party. So political posturing has happened since we've had politics.
You
so
what would have been really refreshing would have been if Fred Thompson had agreed to a debate. I mean, why not? That would have allowed for a reasonable airing of views, not, you know, these isolated punchlines that you can get your 20 seconds on the nightly news.
Well, the question is why? Why would you debate Michael Moore? I mean, if a two-term senator, someone who may very well be the Republican presidential nominee, is going to debate someone, why a filmmaker from Hollywood? Why wouldn't he debate somebody like Hillary or somebody instead, somebody with at least some stature?
Hillary didn't challenge him to debate. You know, I think, you know, there's something to be said from the willingness to engage in discussion for its own sake, like you and I are doing here, or like Jerry Falwell did when, you know, Larry Flint, you know, wrote and printed terrible things about him, and he sued him and he lost, and then he engaged in actual debates, actual exchanges of ideas with his ideological foe. I think that's enlightening, you know, not just these little toss-off lines and cheap shots, but to actually have an exchange of ideas, a true debate.
Yeah, I want a brief comment on Jerry Falwell's passing this week, Owen Robinson, his legacy?
His legacy is universal hatred from the left, and I thought much of the reaction to his death was fairly unbecoming, although not unsurprising or unexpected. You know, he was a man that I disagreed with on a good number of things, and I disagreed with him seeking to represent the Christian majority for the nation. However, he was a man of his convictions who worked very hard to act on his convictions, and we should all hope that we do the same.
Bill Leaders?
No, I listened to the program before we came on the air with Julianne Appling, and even she acknowledged that Jerry Falwell was a divisive personality, that, you know, he stirred up people's passions against him in negative ways, as well as uniting the Christian conservatives and to the moral majority. I do think that it's not necessarily the best time to attack someone after they're dead, and I'll have nothing bad to say about Jerry Falwell. I certainly didn't hate him when he was alive. I think there was a lot of earnest disagreement that gets painted as hatred because it's easier for conservatives to dismiss criticism as being some sort of irrational hatred than it is for them to acknowledge that there is a reason sometimes for people to disagree with things that conservatives say.
Let me touch on a couple of state issues, very short on time. The state Senate passed a bill that would require hospitals to tell rape victims about and to provide it, if it is requested, the morning after pill or emergency contraception. It passed by a pretty wide margin. And now it's up to the Assembly, but apparently the Assembly hasn't scheduled this, and it's unclear if it will be scheduled for a vote and what its fate would be there. Owen Robinson, shouldn't the Assembly take this up and vote on this?
No.
Why?
Well, my issue with this is, obviously, I'm anti-abortion, so I don't think that, we go there. I realize that here we're talking about massive doses of contraception and stuff. My issue with this is more from a religious freedom and private property rights. This is really targeted at the Catholic hospitals out there. With CERV, I think the number I heard when they were debating this in the Senate was 43% of the patients in Wisconsin or something go through the Catholic hospital systems. And it's really targeted at those systems to, and for Catholics to have to, if this goes against their faith and against their, the billions of dollars over the years that they've invested in medical technology to build these hospitals to serve the community, then I don't see why the government should be forcing them to go against their beliefs.
You know, if it goes against your faith to take a contraceptive pill after you've been raped, you can always say no. But hospitals are public institutions. People don't always have a choice as to which hospital they end up in. And if you're going to have a hospital that's a public institution treating members of the public at times of extreme need in their lives, you have to have standards. And you can't say that my religion says contraception is wrong, therefore I won't make it available to a victim of rape. That's just not appropriate. And it is the role of government to make sure that hospitals don't abuse their trust in that fashion.
Let me ask about the debut of Wisconsin Eye. This has been in the works for many years now, and it is debuting. It's Wisconsin's C-SPAN, and you can watch it on the Internet now. Maybe cable stations will pick it up in the near future. Are you going to be watching Bill Leaders?
I haven't yet. I probably will at some point when it gets on the cable. I'll check it out. I know it's fashionable for people to say the reason this took so long is that the legislature doesn't want the cameras on. They don't want people to see what they're actually doing, or that once people see it, that they'll be just aghast at how bad our lawmakers are. I have just the opposite view on it. I think the more that people see actual lawmakers in the midst of making laws, the more impressed they'll be. That's always been my experience. People have these knee-jerk assumptions. They're all a bunch of dummies. They don't know what they're doing. But if you actually watch the legislature in action, it's a pretty impressive bunch of people, agree with them or not.
Yeah, and a brief, we have less than a minute, Owen Robinson. Are you going to watch Wisconsin Eye?
I actually have been watching it some, and I've watched a fair number of debates between these politicians, and you can tell there's a good amount of nervousness and a lot of prepared speeches rather than their normal off-the-cuff remarks. I suspect that over time that'll decline and they'll go back to their normal ways. It's a valuable service. I think it provides not only insightful value, but also a fair amount of entertainment value.
Well, you two have been very informative and entertaining. Thank you both for being with us. Owen Robinson, thanks.
Thank you.
And Bill Leaders, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bill Leaders, news editor for Isthmus, Madison's alternative weekly newspaper, president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, and author of Cry Rape. Owen
Robinson,
now out in paperback. And also Owen Robinson, blogger for the website BootsandSabers.com, a columnist for the West Bend Daily News. And if you want to check out Wisconsin Eye and our state lawmakers in action, it's wiseye.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.